I will keep harping on it because it's an important issue, and it's really good that it's surfaced. So it really is a service to everyone that this has surfaced in such a major way, where two of the Western pillars of non-dual teachings are bringing into everyone's awareness that we really need to change our approach. We really need to change our approach. First of all, we need to stop looking at awareness as a destination. We need to stop employing methods and practices that examine personalities, egos, and everything else, and just get down to brass tacks. And the brass tacks are that all points of view are equal. The only way to exhaust faults and perfect qualities does not exist within the conceptual mind. It only is awareness. It's only in going completely beyond all concepts, which requires that all concepts be realized to be absolutely equal, whether they're positive, neutral, or negative, that there is this great exclamation, this great exhilaration of the perfection of qualities. None of these faults, like desire or anger or anything else that we're faced with as human beings, can be rectified in any way within the conceptual mind and body. The best that can happen is that they're neutralized. And what happens when they're neutralized? Then all of a sudden they explode in some form at some point in time. It is inevitable. It is inevitable that that's the case. But when we support each other so directly in there not being a destination to realize something, then it opens up a spaciousness that hitherto did not exist for all of us. Because then we can all support each other in integrating all of our points of view, whatever they might be. But for someone to face something like this and to face it all publicly in such a way is a real plea for support. It's not just a plea for support for that community, but it's a plea to all of humankind to come together in some kind of way where we can support each other in living as timeless awareness in a real way that isn't so bound by opposites. Oh, the holy, sacred ones who are purer than the driven snow, and the tainted ones who are filled with stain and imperfection. That hasn't worked so far. Why would it begin working now? It's never worked, and it never will. The authentic, direct teachings have always had tremendous latitude around these matters, where people would begin teaching, but they would never teach without mentorship. There would always be mentorship in place. Even if their guru died or teacher died, then they would have another one as their root teacher or guru. No one would ever be so arrogant or self-righteous to teach without one. This is just the way it's always been. We as human beings support each other in who we're being, whether we're being conventional, all wrapped up in the preoccupation of self, or whether we're living as the wisdom body for the benefit of the whole. The wisdom body, its natural impulse is to be of benefit to the whole. The conventional body, to not be, to be preoccupied with the self. But as we transition into that wisdom body, as fully evident and obvious at all times, you know, there's some gray areas along the way. That's just the way it is. But to suddenly say, oh no, that person couldn't possibly be living as timeless awareness because they exhibited this fault, that's totally absurd, especially when the person is such a brilliant teacher and has so much to offer so many and has already contributed so much to so many. He's a force to be reckoned with. And to be able to see that all points of view really are equal is a way he can really come to terms with this thing that I know has been troublesome for him for decades. For decades, I know that it has. So, you know, this is just the way it is. When all of this came down, I just said to a few people, I said, well, you know, no one else may want him, but we want him here. He's welcome here. We'd be happy to have him as a great freedom teacher. Because, you know, the things aren't black and white. They really aren't. This world of opposites, that it's just important not to jump into it. When we make ourselves wrong or make others wrong, we immediately devolve into a tailspin of inexactitude and vagueness that is all wrapped up in conceptual fabrications. And we see, especially in the situation where that leads, gossip, criticism, no unity whatsoever. For all of humankind to become aware requires unity. It has to be the common welfare or unity of everyone together that comes first as the basis for the individual freedom. It's so essential, it's so important. And in the Great Freedom Teaching, that is our first principle of unity and service. We have a teaching on that, that the common welfare of the group comes first, that realization for everyone depends upon unity. But what that means in a practical way is no one is ever kicked out for any reason. No matter how huge their failure is, that's what it looks like in practical terms. If someone fails, then the response is to support them to succeed rather than to boot them out. That's insanity. That's what we've been doing that's led to all this chaos. How could we possibly imagine that it would continue to work? Where there's a perpetrator, there's a victim. These are dualistic concepts that do not support anyone. And in this case, for both of the parties involved, the one who's calling himself a perpetrator and the one who's calling herself a victim, it requires that each of them take responsibility for their own points of view and then make amends, affect direct changes in their relationship with each other, whereby each will be upheld, and with the entire community embracing and surrounding both of them as this occurs. And then the wife, too, is seen as a victim. Either seen as a victim or blamed as a co-conspirator and enabler. This is a dualistic tailspin of endless fabrications of gossip and criticism. So too with the wife, it's important for her to keep the focus on herself and look at her own points of view in a very clear-cut way. Again, a brilliant teacher, a person who has offered so much to so many, and who can truly go beyond all conceptual activities without ever needing to realize anything in seeing the importance of this event. But I mean its true importance, not its importance as some kind of tawdry National Enquirer endeavor. This has to stop. It's more of the same thing. This is a thriving worldwide community, and to be shutting down centers everywhere and him refusing to teach and then the wife publicly denouncing him or speaking about him in condescending ways about his integrity and everything else, just stop. That's all I say. Just stop. Come together. Come together. Sound like the Beatles, don't I? Come together. But this is absolutely essential. There is no reason for this community to disintegrate over this. And if they need support from the outside, then they need to get that support. If they would like to see the principles of unity and service, we would be happy to share those with them. And we would be happy to support them in any other way that is required to bring this to a completion that exalts everyone rather than defames everyone. Defamation and ostracism is just heartbreak of the worst kind. It is the whole root of the spin out of dualistic thinking. In the dualistic conventional body and mind, the constant fear of every human being is that they'll be ostracized and that they won't belong. This is the constant fear, and the constant hope is that it will not happen. So there is also the constant impulse to conformity. How am I going to look good? How am I going to look like I'm a good person? We do it within ourselves and we do it to each other. To engage in such attacks upon ourselves or upon others, it's absolutely fruitless. It requires that everyone give up their right to be a victim of their points of view. So in this case, with these three people, they're equally victims of their points of view on the matter. They're equal in making themselves wrong or making someone else wrong. To go beyond it, it really requires fortitude. The direct changes and amends that need to be made not only need to be made by anyone who allowed this to happen in the way that it did, but the direct changes and amends need to come from the entire community or sangha that embraces all three of these people. The teachers are equally members of the sangha. A sangha is non-hierarchical. Everyone in it is equal. It's there to support everyone, including the teachers. We need to uphold our teachers and keep them teaching in every way possible. For one to commit their life to teaching is a bold and courageous move on any human being's part. And when people do so, we need to respect that they have made that commitment and completely committed their entire life to us and, you know, to doing so. And then if they have a failing, to support them in cutting through that and coming to super completeness with it. This is the appropriate way to respond in such situations. We've all been through this in our own lives, at least in some small way, if not in big ways, where we have been defamed and ostracized, or defamed and ostracized ourselves in some way. So we know what it feels like, and it doesn't feel good. It's not life-giving. It's not life-giving at all. So in our interactions with each other, timeless awareness is naturally life-giving in all situations. It has the great power of beneficial intent that knows how to move in all ways, how to move in all ways to create organizations that are healthy, to create authentic teachings that are healthy, to create communities that keep people together in a definitive way rather than the communities where there's always a threat of exclusion. Almost all of our organizations and communities have within them this hidden secret of possible exclusion at some point. For some reason, for some transgression. To move beyond that, we need to have communities that can truly thrive, where people know that their lifelong membership is guaranteed no matter what. And because we have so much information about this topic today, there is much mistaken information. So what is often put out as awareness isn't awareness at all. It isn't timeless awareness. Timeless awareness is not a destination. Thus, in the Pinnacle teachings throughout time, there was never a reference to any destination that was arrived at, like enlightenment. You'd be hard-pressed to find a lama, even the highest lamas who are alive, who would say they were enlightened. It just doesn't happen. And the reason is that enlightenment is considered a point of view, a conceptual framework. The only freedom there is the timeless freedom of awareness in the immediacy of perception as complete perceptual openness in all experience. For a human being, there isn't any other awareness. And so that's just very difficult to accept for anyone who requires proof or some kind of final moment when they will have arrived. Now, I had a dream, and I've shared this dream with some people, about a great, great teacher who introduced many, many people to emptiness, to a state of emptiness. And I had a dream when I was in India last time, and we were at the Kumbh Mela in the dream, except it was so clean. Everything was pristine. Everything was white. We were dressed in white. The streets were white and filled with light, and all the tents and booths were white and filled with light. And Papaji and I were just strolling along arm in arm, having a great old time. And I said, "Oh, this is so much fun, Papaji. This is really great." He said, "Oh, but I have to go. There were some people dressed in white up ahead of him beckoning to him." And he said, "I'm dead, so I have to go with them." And I said, "Oh, can't you stay just a moment longer?" He said, "No, I really can't. I'm dead, so I have to go with them." And so he started walking away, and I said, "Oh, Papaji, one more thing before you go. What happened? Why did so many people fall back?" And he said, "I forgot to tell them about freedom and immediate perception." So you see, this is a brilliant teaching, isn't it? Freedom and immediate perception, because we don't know what perception is going to come up. And certainly among the Tibetans, who have lived with such great adversity, but also as a countrywide, have had accessibility to pinnacle teachings like the Great Freedom Teaching. What people reported when they went through all these adversities, that they had many, many perceptions that they didn't expect to encounter. Like one day they were sitting in Tibet as a high lama sitting on a golden throne, dressed in embroidered silks and giving teachings to thousands of lamas like Neil Shokempo, including the Dalai Lama. And the next moment he was fleeing Tibet, being chased from the air and land with people shooting at him. Then coming to India, living in absolute abject poverty as a sadhu in Rishikesh, and then as a dishwasher in a hotel in Calcutta, being extremely sick physically and also very depressed. And what he said about that is that all it did was increase his faith in timeless awareness, that throughout all of that, no matter what the perceptions were that were naturally, circumstantially occurring, there was greater intensification of awareness. But we can't really say. We don't know how we'll be. So, you know, it's impossible to say that there is a destination. But, you know, like Neil Shokempo, in my own way, I can report to my experience of 25 years, and that is that I've been through all kinds of things, circumstantially great and small and indifferent, and all the while there's been greater and greater intensification of awareness. Recently, when I was going through all these things with doctors in the hospitals and treatments, it was amazing, you know, it was just such an amazing experience, because all the basic space of all these, of all of this pain, illness, not knowing what's going to happen, this, that, and the other thing, it's all outshone by timeless awareness. All of it, all it is timeless awareness. And this just continues to intensify no matter what's going on. The realization of who we truly are, it is a group effort of great ease. You know, it's a coming together of everyone everywhere to support each other in this and to never let anyone fall by the wayside for any reason. We're up to the task. Who we already are makes us up to the task. We don't need to behave in such small ways when we have this enormous capacity within us to be of great benefit to ourselves and to each other. We don't just need a few teachers of timeless awareness. We need many, many people teaching. As soon as someone begins to realize timeless awareness themselves, they have something to share with someone else. It's very simple. And when traditionally it's always been set out in a certain way, and that there's been a formal written teaching, and that teaching is encountered in a certain way by human beings. Human beings like to have structures they can count on. It helps with feeling comfortable and at ease in the world. When there's a written teaching that can be completely counted on to deliver the direct truth, and everyone everywhere is relying on those same words, then it opens up a very wide avenue of communication within humankind, where through a common language we can communicate with each other what is required. So someone's having a total breakdown, we can say, well, rest naturally, and I'll help you do that. Find the ease in what's going on. Because no matter what it is a bastion of complete ease. There's never been a prison anywhere. So even though it may seem like timeless awareness has to be all good and fluffy and only one thing, it's everything. It really is everything. And not everything is some kind of band-aid, philosophical band-aid. But everything in the lived experience of it. And this is why we sometimes say in the Great Freedom Teaching that afflictive states are the path. Afflictive states are the path. You know, it's easy to see that the neutral and positive states are timeless awareness, or relatively so, but those afflictive states, they really feel like they are something that has power, right? Yet when we just allow the ease of our being, and that means nothing more than relaxing body and mind. That's it. The relaxed body and mind doesn't have the impulse any longer to try to make up a story about what's going on that will give afflictive states any kind of power. The minute an afflictive state is fed with conceptual proofs, it's like a hungry dog, you know, they just want more and more and more. Say the dog's been out running through the woods for hours and hours. It comes in, it's looking at its bowl. All it wants is some kibble in that bowl and maybe something to spice it up a little bit. And then it just devours every bite of it. So afflictive states are like that. If we feed it a little, they're off and running. And then we have the whole story about how much power the afflictive state has over us. To just relax the body and mind, how difficult could that be? Everyone's up to it. It requires very little. Initially, it may seem like a big change, but when it's looked at in terms of short moments repeated many times, it becomes approachable. We're not trying to get into any contrived state, like setting up a period where we're trying to prolong awareness. Even if you insist on meditating, which absolutely is not necessary, when meditating, relax body and mind, and in the direct encounter with all perceptions that come up, whether they're conceptual or non-conceptual, just allow them to be the basic space of awareness and nothing else. No perception that comes up in meditation needs to be changed for it to be a good meditation. Every moment of life is meditation, waking, dreaming, or sleeping. That becomes obvious when we encourage the decisive experience of awareness rather than trying to get into a state. The states feel good, and they certainly feel better often than the frenetic activity of the conceptual mode of mind, but they're nowhere. You know, they're nothing to be taken up. They're just another framework, this time a non-conceptual framework. The beneficial intent of timeless awareness is clearly obvious, and that all appearances are super completeness itself, the super completeness of timeless awareness itself. How could there be anything that isn't beneficial? So this is another area where anyone who requires conceptualization or analyzation to prove something that is impossible to prove, then it's going to be difficult to resolve that. You know, it really does require just letting everything be as it is, including all the intellectual speculation. There are many people who come to the Great Freedom Teaching who don't know anything about awareness, have never been to a non-dual teaching, or know little about it, and it's definitely not required. Although I've seen many, many relief seekers in my day. And the thing that relieves most seekers is that they finally get that everything is equal. That they're not trying to get into some kind of state of equalness, that everything already is equal. Oh,
Just misery. Worst misery of my life.
Yeah, there's no misery like that misery. Having been in a state and then being booted out and trying to get back. Or being in the state and then having some kind of really heavy duty psychological collapse. Or physical collapse, or something like that, wondering what happened. But you see, if there's an authentic teacher in teaching, then the teaching itself is a response to that, if anything like that comes up. In the authentic teachings, it's built in that at some point when significant realization of timeless awareness has set in, that there will be a complete collapse. The physical and emotional collapse, the final letting be of all conceptual frameworks as they are. And that's a real turning point, but you see, unless a person has a teacher who's been through that, and has an authentic teaching, then there's no support and they don't know what to do. They think there's something wrong with them. And we definitely have seen a lot of that in the last 20 years. But there isn't anything wrong. It's just that there's certain support needed at that time to let all concepts fade away. And it's different things for different people. It's not always the same thing. Whatever your holdouts are, point of view in your own life, those are the things that'll come up, the things that you're subtly holding to, whatever they are. Whether they're things where you're just not really certain that those points of view are equal to all the other timeless awareness points of view, like maybe that weird sexual fantasy you have or whatever it is. And just realizing in the trenches, in the throes of it, in the direct encounter with it, that everything is timelessly free no matter what it is. There's never been anything that isn't free. Every thought, every emotion ever had, every experience ever had, it's all timelessly free. And that total equalness and evenness, rather than being some kind of moral collapse, is the blossoming, the burgeoning of the wisdom body. And of all pervasive compassion, that's when the real warmth of bliss and well-being appear in the body. It's through that direct experience of your own circumstantial points of view that it's realized that you've always been totally complete, just as you are. What could be more compassionate than that? You don't need to adopt anybody else's points of view or states or anything else. It's all, everything about you is already totally pristine in and of itself. There's nothing more compassionate than that. You know, just in a practical way, a simple human way, the intimacy that it allows is just stunning. It's just an intimacy like unlike any other. A total intimacy unlike any other. Because there's absolutely nothing in the way. There's the complete understanding of oneself, and in that, there's complete understanding of everyone. So there are no more buttons to push. There's just complete openness and intimacy of seamlessness, of a single expanse. That's so far beyond words and concepts, completely beyond words and concepts. Within reasoning through words and concepts, it doesn't seem like that could possibly be, that it could possibly be that all words and concepts and experiences are equal in their essence. But they are. And isn't that the true message of non-duality? It is the true message of non-duality. So we can never have non-duality by chopping it up into things like states or destinations or timeless awareness pure and certain points of view impure or less pure, self and non-self, spiritual and non-spiritual. There's nothing to fix or modify.